Hey friend, it's David Nabinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at the Portfolio Career Podcast, we hope to take ownership of your career and design a life that you want to live. Are you looking to be a better conversationalist or have better conversations? Well, I've been having some really great conversations with Charlotte Jackson recently, and I'm impressed with how she meets me like right where I'm at and offers support and perspective. I asked her if she wanted to have a meta conversation about conversations and questions, and here we go. Charlotte also is the co-founder of a card deck called Candid. She writes a newsletter and is a transitions coach. So if you're looking to get better at having conversations, this episode is for you. You can learn more about the podcast on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter that I send out every 2 weeks, if not more. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Charlotte. Okay, Charlotte. We were just jamming about Maggie Rogers. And we wanted to talk about the song, but I was thinking we actually could start off with one of these.
Oh my goodness. What are those?
I'm holding a deck, a card deck called Candid.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, does it?
A little bit, vaguely.
Well, maybe I'll pick out a card and then we can talk about it a little bit more after that. So I'm just going to pick one.
I'm also getting a huge deja vu right now because the first time I met you, you were standing in a doorway and we answered a conversation card.
Was that Samani's thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so the first question is, what have you changed your mind about recently?
So something I've been thinking a lot about recently and maybe changed my mind about just in terms of the meaning that I assigned to it is the idea of a pilgrimage. Like, what is a pilgrimage? And part of this stemmed from reading, I think we were talking the other day, but I was telling you a little bit about Jedediah Jenkins' book, To Shake the Sleeping Self. And for those who have not heard of it or read it, it's his journey biking from Portland to Patagonia, which I believe was a 10,000-mile bike ride done over the span of 16 months. And it's this beautiful pilgrimage that he goes on, starting in one place, ending in another, knowing that a lot will change and come up along the way, but not being sure as to what will transpire exactly. And it was reminding me a lot. I took a class actually in college called Pilgrimage, Travel, and Tourism that I was so moved by, but I kind of forgot about this trope and how much I cared about it, and how meaningful I think pilgrimages can be in the very traditional definition of it, but also in more of a loosely interpreted like trip or journey where you start somewhere, you know you're going to end in another place, but you're not sure what you're going to be struck by in the midst. So I don't know that I've necessarily changed my mind about it recently, but I've been thinking a lot and maybe changed slightly my understanding or the definition of what it is and how applicable I think pilgrimages are to people in transition.
Cool. We'll talk about transitions more. I mean, so many threads here to pull on, which, I think you've popularized the term threads.
I don't know if I can take full credit for that.
But questions, and this deck of cards, like why did you want to create this deck of cards? It's called Candid. What about questions and cards, and why is this like meaningful to you?
So Candid is a deck of 52 playing cards and conversation starter. So it's a normal deck of cards and each of them have a conversation on the face of it, or sorry, a conversation starter question on the face of it. And I started it with my boyfriend, John. And it really was born out of the summer of 2023, where there was just so much electricity in the air in Williamsburg. I know you were a huge part of that and felt it, David. But I think that it really came from a shared note that we started on our phone, where we started gathering questions. And one of the things that John and I initially bonded over was just how much an intentional question can change the nature of someone's answer, and how disarming a question can be. So the first question that John ever asked me in conversation was, "What's the dream?" And I remember being so struck by it because to that point, most people had asked me, "What do you do for work?" or things that just kind of get a little bit more of an elevator pitch answer out of me. And I actually answered "What's the dream?" with a little bit of that elevator pitch because I didn't know otherwise. But when I asked it back to him, and he gave me the most beautiful open-ended answer, which was basically, I have been working on projects with the most incredible people for kind of my whole life. And the reason that that has transpired is because I've been in the right place at the right time and things have just unfolded in perfect timing. So the dream for him was to just continue doing that. And it was so freeing to know that you could just answer that type of question in such an ambiguous but beautiful and honest way that I started to really take in. And we created a note together, a shared note of the questions that people asked us that we thought were a little bit counter to the traditional narrative, but just so moving. So we had this list of like hundreds of questions, and then we wanted to turn it into a game and figured we would design it as our own custom card game.
I think there's two. I want to, like, in this conversation around the art of conversation, obviously questions are a big part of conversation. This part that you said that was really, there's like two main things that I think that you said that I want to, like, go deeper on. You said how a question can change a conversation. What do you mean by that?
So a question can change a conversation because it can make somebody immediately on the defensive or and immediately in a specific memorized narrative, or it can make the person improvise. So you're very good at this. You ask questions that are perfectly specific, such that someone knows how to answer them, but not so tailored that it makes you just give like a elevator pitch again. And the way that you just asked that question is a perfect example. And what I love about these kind of disarming, open-ended questions is it makes the person think while they're speaking, as opposed to just repeating things that they've said in the past. So I think these kind of open-ended questions that allow people to feel welcomed into sort of their own pilgrimage in the into the answer of like knowing what they kind of want to get at, but not being sure how they're going to get there. That's what makes for really interesting conversation. And it's like the tiniest subtleties in the way that you in your intonation and the way that you ask a question that I think can make or break the difference of whether someone immediately is like, oh God, I'm being interviewed, or like, oh, interesting. Like, how can I answer this on the fly?
There is a lot of, like, nuance and subtleties to this. Like, is there a way to, like, I can imagine through making this deck of cards, you really thought about, like, each word and then I know you had, like a survey, and you're asking people, like, which of these ones do you like? And then, it seems like you really had a huge list, whittled it down for specific reasons. And I'm wondering, like, what have you noticed about, or what makes something more inviting, or what are examples of, like, don't do this but do this, or maybe, like, try not to do this but consider this? Like, is there any, like, ways of, like, that we can maybe break down a potential question and say, like, okay, here's the classic, like, what do you do? And maybe, like, instead of saying that, but you are curious about their work, like, you could say something like this. Is there anything, like, any, like case studies, I guess, on this?
Or like rules of thumb. I think so much of it is in the delivery of the question. I think that it's, I hesitate to be super wordsmithy about it because I think that that can trip people up, especially when you're in the conversation. If you're like trying to be so detail oriented about every word that you use, I think it can make you get too much in your head. I think you can feel the energy of a question coming at you. So I think if I had to give sort of a rule, try to just slightly change the questions that you've been asked a million times to be a little bit different so that somebody isn't going to give you an answer that they've given you a million times. So let me give you some examples. Instead of asking somebody that just got back from a Euro summer vacation, hey, how's your trip? Like, if you say that, they're just going to tell you what they've told 100 other people about their trip. But if you are a little bit more intentional with, are there any practices or anything, any moments from the trip that you're taking home with you and want to implement into your day to day? Or who was the most interesting person that you met on the trip? I think and you also do a very good job of this, trying to find a little bit more of a trailhead. So, like a more specific, immediate answer of a moment that allows you to then craft a larger story off of that answer is going to be better than just like a huge generalization loft where it's a little bit hard for people to run through their memory and give you something that is actually going to lead to further conversation.
Yeah, so it sounds like try to like elicit stories and elicit emotion versus like a typical like ChatGPT
Yeah,
response.
like think about the questions you've been asked 100 million times and like try not to ask those ones. And then when you are asking a question, because I agree, like so many people are super interested in what someone does for work, so it's fine to ask that, but just like try to make the energy of that question and maybe a little bit of the wording that you use feel like an invitation to maybe give a different answer than that person has given a million times before.
Yeah. And then disarming, that was another piece. So I think I heard you say like, and questions can open up, kind of take us to new places, take the person and take the conversation to a new place, because it like elicits these stories or et cetera. Like it provides a new path forward for both people. But then you also said disarming, and it seems like disarming is a really interesting way that like could make people feel more comfortable so that they will share these types of things. And it sounds like that's kind of like maybe like a like another kind of rule of thumb or like an intention when you ask probably pretty like because I've in our conversations I know that you've asked some very like questions that had me pause and think and really dive deep, but like because I felt comfortable with you, I was really able to share things that probably haven't shared that many people about.
I'm
So,
flattered.
which I think is a function of like disarming the situation. How do you think about disarming in, or like what types, yeah, how do you think about disarming when asking questions?
Back to Jedediah Jenkins to Shake the Sleeping Self. Clearly, I'm very taken with this book in this moment. So, he on this pathway from Portland to Patagonia stops in Machu Picchu to do the trek and has a few friends fly in to meet him. And a lot of the threads throughout this book are about him really questioning his sexuality and questioning the way that religion plays a role in his sexuality. He was raised in a devoutly Christian family and had been really challenged by this. So the reason I bring this up in relation to disarming is because as him and a few friends were on the trek through Machu Picchu, he had one friend in particular named Annabelle, who he labels as asking very disarming questions. And what he meant by that is they're on a walk. She's actually talking to another person about her faith and asks him a question, like kind of a lofty question of like sort of what do you believe in or how do you think about religion? And the other person starts answering in a way where there's a lot of ambiguity. Welcome. He's kind of not sure. They're sort of workshopping it live. And she's also reflecting upon her beliefs changing. And so Jedediah Jenkins is kind of listening to this whole conversation take place. And he's answering himself as well and is just so struck by how this conversation was so informative for all parties because they were getting to workshop their understandings live. And about things that were really sensitive and things that they didn't really want to talk about or even question because it felt scary. But because of the warmth and disarming nature of the way that she asked the question, it was this beautiful invitation into self-discovery for each individual and also this collective discovery of, hey, we're all here in this moment. Let's kind of pool our resources together and try to make meaning out of this. And I think that a disarming question provides an opportunity or a pathway for people to do that together.
How do you like to disarm? Like, how do you think about like doing that yourself?
Again, I think it is back to your tone and like you can feel the intention behind a question. So I think that in asking it in a way that just feels soft. It feels like you're not really looking for a specific answer and like maybe inviting the person to work on it together. So I'm trying to think of an example to give. I can't think of an example on the fly, but
Totally cool. I I guess it, I think it's interesting for people to, or like, could you share how like questions and meaningful conversations have really like changed your life? It seems like, and I mostly know you from that 2023 era on forward. But like maybe paint a picture for like what is 2021 or 2020 or like new to New York, Charlotte look like, and how like through intentional conversations and like great questions kind of like opened your mind and kind of, you know, I doubt a couple of years ago you were thinking about making a deck of cards. So I can imagine there was like a wow, like intentional conversations can really move the needle for me. And now I'm, you know, hosting dinner parties or getting invited to go to dinner parties and building like a whole new social world through great conversations. But like, take us back to like, you know, pre-Substack, or like new to New York. I think in one of your Substacks, you said you didn't want to have, you didn't want to just like go out to bars to drink and with people. So like, talk us about like where you were and how maybe conversations have changed your life.
First, that's a perfect example of a disarming question. So thank you for doing it for me. And the reason for that is because you're very generous in giving me enough room to play, but also giving me enough to kind of grab that it makes me feel really welcomed and comfortable in the conversation. So thank you for the disarming question. And to answer it, so the first thing that came to mind in thinking about pre-New York Charlotte, and kind of using these trailheads or these like small little moment stories and trying to just like paint the picture of how my brain works. So in college, I studied American Studies, which was basically a way of taking all of the classes that I looked at on the course catalog and graduating on time. Like I had the most eclectic mix of things that I wanted to study, and that seemed like the major where I could lump them all in and graduate in the period that I wanted to. So, as part of my major, you had to write a thesis, and I was actually pretty mortified about this being my topic at the time, but it explains a lot about me now, which is that I chose to write an 100-page thesis about the persimmon fruit. And the reason for that was I found it to be such a fascinating trailhead. So it was this one item. My thesis advisor actually used such an amazing analogy that I still think of all of the time, which is that oftentimes when we want to study something, we choose like a huge boulder, like a massive topic, like gender studies or food studies or something enormous. But it's really hard to contribute anything meaningful to that conversation because it's so massive. But if you were to go up to that boulder and look and see if there'd been a pebble that had fallen off of it, you could pick up the pebble and hold it on your hand and really get to know all of the textures of its surfaces, all of its crevices, everything about it. And that will give you a much more powerful trailhead or pathway into contributing to the conversation. And so I wrote this whole paper using the persimmon fruit as a pathway into different horticultural records and recipe records, who writes recipes, why all of these things. So that was like a little tidbit that came in thinking about like pre-2020 Charlotte. And the reason that I think that that informs the other part of your question, which is like kind of where was my head at? What was I thinking? What was I like before? Is because I've always been a very, I like threads. I like tying a lot of things together. I like meeting a lot of people. And in moving to New York, I think that that like introduced me to a lot of other people that were doing the same thing. But I think prior to that, I was sort of like going around trying to find other people that were interested in similar ways of existing. But New York felt like the holy mecca of finding that. So it was such an expansive period of time for me.
You mentioned the pebble, and we'll link in the follow-up notes here. There's a yeah, I got a Substack post that's called "How to Ask Better Questions" post, and you mentioned this like you start with the pebble. So we won't kind of regurgitate that part, but just saying like there's a lot more to learn from Charlotte, and here's a follow-up resource afterwards. But I think what's really interesting also is this like these like trailheads or like what's kind of interesting. Or like one way that I'm interpreting what you're saying here too is like sometimes I feel like I kind of ramble in my questions and I kind of add a bunch of different things. And it used to be, I think, because maybe I wasn't as confident in my question. And so I'd be kind of like, what do you like to do? If that's interesting to you or if it's not, maybe there's something else that like, do you have a burrito place that you like? And like I would bounce around. I think because maybe like not as having as much confidence in like do I think someone feels comfortable, or that's a good question. But I'm interpreting this, and this is a very like I'm feeling more like empowered, I guess, in this approach is like I'm leaving potential trailheads for people, even though like I'm maybe not saying like what's the one answer to this one question, and maybe because that one question might be very too specific or too personal, but giving a couple different threads and trailheads might be easier for people. So I like this because it's funny because like sometimes when people ask me like a question that I don't really know how to answer, or like I don't feel as like comfortable, I feel like I like I will just say a bunch of different things. Like so as an example, if someone's like, "Hey, how was your weekend?" I will say like 5 to 6 different things intentionally, hoping that like because I don't have the perfect one thing. So like I might say like, "Oh, I was walking along Bedford. It was great. Oh, I went to a friend's birthday party. I pub like worked on a Substack. I went to the gym." Like I will just like say a bunch of different things, almost because like I don't know, maybe that question felt like hard to answer, or also just trying to
Totally.
find yeah, like a thread for someone else to pull on. So like I like how this like even though it feels weird to say it, it actually like seems like might spark further conversation because people can pick the thing that they want to pick.
I completely agree. And also, if you think back to somebody asking you, how was your weekend, which I agree is like not the best question because it's really hard to think like, oh, immediately when someone asks me, how was your weekend, I forget everything that I did that weekend. I don't know what it is about that. I just completely black
Same.
out. But if someone was like, what was the best thing you ate this weekend? Or what was your favorite moment this weekend? It makes your I'm sure there's some neuroscience probably behind why the specificity of that question makes it easier to answer. But if somebody asks a more specific question that prompts a more specific story answer and depiction of a moment, it gives you a lot more, I think, to play with then, right? So if I'm telling you a story about something that happened this past weekend, you're going to ask follow-up questions that are probably going to lead us on a conversation completely away from initially what happened this weekend. But the more specific, I think, of the question, the smaller the pebble, the better the conversation tends to be, even if you end up going into a completely different direction.
Yeah. So one thing that I think that I really appreciate that I think you're very skilled and talented at is like the ability to just kind of meet me where I'm at and kind of like take it to the next level. And what I mean by that is like I may be talking about something personal and it feels like you just kind of like see where that's at and you can like understand it and then you can like build upon it really quickly. And oftentimes also the other thing that I think is really interesting is you bring in other resources, like you mentioned podcast episodes, and I'm wondering like how you do it with like you bring in podcast episodes or quotes or book references in a way that's like not in a way that's generative versus like cool, you listen to a podcast episode on this thing and now you think you're an expert on this topic, and it's like you know but I'm wondering like how do you think about that, or like why like bringing in different resources and podcasts or quotes or like insights or ideas, but in a way that like it feels generative versus like oh yeah, I heard this on a podcast, and it's like, okay, that's like not your idea, and like that doesn't I can't really relate to that because you're just basically taking what someone else said and then like copying and pasting it into this conversation. But I feel like you weave these other ideas and resources in a way that like meets me where I'm at and like expands my thinking. How do
Wow.
you yeah,
That
how do
is
you
the highest form of praise.
But
I so appreciate
I'm
that.
honestly curious, like how do you do it? But like very quickly, like you just like can meet me in the moment and then like expand my surface area of thoughts.
I like that phrase.
Yeah, so do
I
I.
write that down. Make sure you remember that. Write that down. I think without knowing sort of what I'm doing and having a conversation with you and people I care about or anyone really is I'm also looking for and listening for trailheads. And trailheads actually I need to credit to IFS, internal family systems. At least that's where I got that term from, and I'm sure maybe where it originated from, which I integrate a lot of IFS into my own practices and coaching. And basically what that is when somebody is telling a story, expressing something, and you can tell there's a little bit of a shift, like maybe a bit more emotion comes alive, or they really light up saying, recounting a specific moment from the weekend. That is a trailhead. That's something where you can ask someone to kind of like, and you yourself can sort of slow down and take that moment in. So let's say we're walking and talking, and you're telling me a story, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, interesting. Like, I'm noticing, I might be wrong, but like, it sounds like maybe some overwhelm is coming up here. Like, does that feel right? Like, can we speak more to that? Or maybe like, oh, wow, David, you got so excited talking about this. Like, what does this remind you of? And so, looking for changes in emotion or somebody being more expressive or just different in the way that they explain something, I think presents a trailhead, which is important because it allows you to connect more empathy towards that, right? Like you, there are pretty few experiences that somebody else has had when you're talking to them that you haven't had yourself, or it reminds you of something. And this is natural. I think anytime someone is speaking, we're filtering it through our own experience to try to relate better. So when you're sharing something, I'm trying to suss out what is David feeling right now? What's alive around this topic? And then it makes me filter through, oh, what's been helpful to me? What have I listened to or learned about this topic that has felt like freedom? And that's usually where I'm more easily able to grab, like, oh, okay, I was actually reading this book and it was talking about this thing that kind of reminds me of this. Or I was having a conversation with another friend and we workshopped this and it was so helpful for me. So maybe it will relate here or maybe it won't. But I kind of use those trailheads as a moment to take a step back, think about my own experience, and see if there are any little data points that I can help offer.
Well, it's great. And again, like it is like an art, and I guess it is also like who you are and how you've like developed your conversations. I can imagine like pre-podcast David's conversations were much different and stuff. So like I know it might be kind of hard to describe like the meta of like your approach to conversations, but I did want to just like reflect it of like how I experience it. And yeah, it's different and unique. And I was curious if there's ways to learn from it.
I think, well, a more brass tacks answer to that, because I do completely think that you're onto something with your conversation style changes when you're podcasting or writing or thinking about things differently. So if somebody were to say, oh, that sounds really cool. Like, I want to speak more like that or think more like that or ask questions like that. My number one recommendation would be to go on YouTube and type in Anna Howard, Digital Gardening. I think that's the title. If you type that in, it will pop up. And it's this video where a YouTube creator that I'm a huge fan of talks about her practice of digital gardening. And what this means is in Notion or Obsidian or some other platforms, she will read and then collect these little scraps or little notes about things that has stood out to her in books and podcasts and conversations, and kind of create her own mind maps around certain topics by through tagging and interrelations. And I think my practice, I'm not super consistent with it all the time, but when I am reading, I'm highlighting and taking notes, and I feel like that helps keep the recency of that information in my memory such that when I'm having a conversation, it's more primed, my recall is better. So if you want to improve that skill, watch that video and start a Obsidian Notion platform.
I like I don't know if you know Bree Wolfson.
I don't think I do.
I think that you would really like her work.
Okay, noting.
And I like she's got one of the coolest websites.
Ooh.
And it's very warm and inviting. And she also has this like notes to self section, which is kind of how this reminds me of. And the other thing that's like You might like the treat friends to dinner, get good at talking on the phone. It often goes in one ear and out the other. Gift time, not things. Hang out with people that can make music. Few things in life beat a big crowded table. Anyways, she's got a lot of these, like, what I'm considering almost like rules of thumb or ways of just like things that she's noticed. And Brie, I'm sorry if I'm botching this, but the reason why this is also coming up is like I have recently been thinking, or I was having a conversation with someone actually right after we talked, and I was sharing a story and stuff, and this person was kind of like, we both kind of co-created or decided, or he definitely encouraged me, shout out Ray, to like include a loom and as part of a communication. Like sending a loom has been my like rule of thumb or my approach or my
Trademark.
like
It's part of your
catalyst.
personal brand.
And it's like this is like, but in this moment while I was trying something new, I almost forgot this tactic, approach, way of being, way of communicating. And I'm trying to remind myself like what are these, just like the way Breeze got them. And it sounds like, you mentioned Anna, how she kind of collects these kind of like top of mind ideas. Anyways, I was thinking about like I need to get back to these like 5 to 10 things, 20 things, et cetera, and just like keep looking at them as my life evolves, et cetera. And I was curious if like you've thought about that as well, of like, because when we change and we evolve, like we kind of forget, because we're also like, it's a lot more, there's a lot more emotion and there's a lot more things happening that like we can be blind to the things that we like used to do or we did when we're feeling great versus like when we're afraid or,
Totally. I think the fact that we forget them, though, is part of the beauty. I think when you're able to return to something that you previously connected with and had momentarily forgotten it, there is this intense feeling of homecoming that's like, oh, yeah, that thing was so helpful for me in the past. How cool that I get to reinstate it. And usually, when you reconnect with it or reapproach it in a different way, it helps you integrate it a little bit more differently. But it is so beautiful to have mirrors in our lives, like Ray, the friend that was able to be like, yeah, David, why don't you send a loom in that context where that's so innate to who you are, but you weren't thinking of it for X, Y, and Z reason. But yeah, I tend to think like it is really fun when you have something, a practice that you are really connected to, and then life happens and you go and explore different things. And if you come back to it in the future, there's a reacquaintanceship that I think happens, and it feels like homecoming.
Seth Godin recently had this a blog post on this too called like Notes to Self, which is basically how Brie is calling this too. I feel like I had a Substack post that I wrote a while ago that maybe that could be the starting point for me of this. I think it was like 10 ideas that shaped me or something like that. I'm trying to pull it up now so I can go 10 ideas that have shaped me. Wow, okay.
Okay. What are some of them?
Okay, starting a podcast is a low-cost way to change your life. Look at
Ow,
this.
ow.
Number two, hosting events is one of the best things you can do for your social life. Hosting repeatable events is underrated. Loss can serve as a wake-up call. Okay.
Loss can serve as a wake-up call. Was that last one?
Yeah.
Wow.
This is a good place. I'm gonna go back to this.
Do you have any
And
flights coming up? Are you traveling anytime soon?
I'm not. Should I?
Okay, well, maybe. I find that my favorite time to almost, like, in a bit of a self-congratulatory way, read back through my old notes and thoughts is on literal airplane mode.
It's the best. And people should check out also Seth Godin had this like notes to self post that's really good too. We'll link that. Notes to myself. If you haven't seen that, you should check it out.
I like all these notes. This is another thread, notes to self. It's come up like three times. I need to look into this.
And I share with me your notes to yourself whenever you
Okay.
want, or people that are listening to this, share us your notes to yourself. How do you think about this? So we're talking about this kind of like art of conversation as it relates to like with other people. What does it look like for kind of like life's big questions to yourself? Like, how do you think about asking generative, disarming, thought-provoking questions to yourself for life's big questions?
I think starting with the tiniest little pebble possible, especially if the bigger the question, the better. I find that in literature that I'm reading, the most striking revelations come when I'm reading a pretty mundane sentence, but there's so much significance and power in it. And I think that using that in the way that you ask yourself and other people these questions is how we actually get to some meaningful conclusion for ourselves as well. For instance, the other day I was going to get lunch somewhere. I'm traveling right now. I'm in Copenhagen with a couple of girlfriends, and they were sitting at this cafe, and I was going to find lunch elsewhere. So I got up, and they said as I was leaving, like, please, in journalistic style, document your entire lunch. So I went and I typed in, I wanted like a salad or some type of bowl from a place. So I typed that into Google Maps. And the first place that popped up was called The Turning Chicken, which the name had caught my attention on the walk before because it's a funny name to me. So I looked at the reviews and it definitely looked like it could have gone either way. But I ended up going and having such a delightful bowl from the Turning Chicken that I ate in a cemetery, which is like the most beautiful cemetery I've ever been to. So I'm just sitting there, like so joyously eating this bowl. And I was writing about it in great detail. And I found that in articulating some of this experience, I was thinking back to a lot of moments that had reminded me of similar experience of solo travel in my late teens and early 20s. And moments, I remember this moment vividly being 20 and walking through this random field in New Zealand. And like this wave washed over me where I felt independence and freedom in a way that I had never felt before. And it reminded me of a lot of the stories that my mom and dad had told me about their 20s. And it just felt like, whoa, I just tapped into something. And then sitting in the park again, writing about the turning chicken, I felt really connected to that version of myself. And it also made me feel really excited for a future daughter to have a similar experience. And it just made me so connected to this like deep emotional state through truly the silliest of stories. And so I think that I apply the same methodology to asking myself and asking other people big questions. It often happens in like these small, mundane moments that you're able to really understand your values and make more sense of things that can otherwise feel really daunting and uncertain.
Yeah, love it, love it, love it. Is there anything else that you want to share about this topic? It's been cool to see the new YouTube channel, and it's awesome to see that you're kind of leaning into more of this coaching type of work. Thanks for the impromptu sessions that I get.
It's my favorite.
I know. Yeah, is there anything else that you want to share on this topic or any other resources or anything else that comes to mind?
I think on the topic of just coaching and IFS and trailheads, one thing that I haven't shared in this conversation, which has been so top of mind for me lately, is really getting to learn more of my own parts. So IFS, internal family systems, is about parts work, which essentially is about, I think in language, we often will say, like, a part of me felt, if we're making a decision, a part of me felt this, a part of me felt that. And IFS is like really deeply understanding all of those parts and the interconnections of them. The founder of it, Richard Schwartz, was a family and kind of group therapist before. But when working with individual patients, he started to realize, oh, actually, each person seems to have a whole family inside of them in terms of the ways in which one part gets really angry when another speaks and vice versa. So I find that on the topic of asking questions and conversations, applying this methodology in my own work that I do with my IFS therapist, but also with clients that I integrate a lot of IFS into, it has been such a powerful way of really zooming in on each parts of us. And per the pebble analogy, the more I think you're able to zoom in on a part and really understand the voice of this piece of you, it helps you then zoom in on other parts and understand how the constellation works together. So I guess that's like a final piece that I think really weaves the thread through of a lot of the conversation we've had today, which is like how meta and how deep you can take this on an individual level in exploring someone's idiosyncrasies and all of the parts of them.
Amazing. So, and then places to stay in touch, Instagram, YouTube, Substack, all that kind of stuff.
Instagram, yes. Substack, yes. YouTube, yes. My coaching website is, if you're interested in working with me, is workwithshar.com. Yeah, I think that's all the main places.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, thanks for this beautiful
Thank you.
conversation. Come back to New York, please.
Yeah, I absolutely will.
Okay, cool. All right. Thank you so much, Charlotte. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, David.
Hey, friend. Thank you for listening to this Portfolio Career Podcast episode. I would love to hear what you learned or took away from this episode. I hope you find me, David Nabinsky, on Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Also, if you want the best insights from the podcast and to hear my learnings, please subscribe to my Portfolio Career Substack newsletter that I send out every 2 weeks. You can find that on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com/newsletter. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.